Platten.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Sutton. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case. This is a appeal from a grant of summary judgment to the defendant. And as best I can categorize it, I guess it's kind of a determination that sometimes there are exigent circumstances that allow police officers to assault and batter citizens under color of law.
Well, now, Vino was wearing a cap displaying the logo of the police department.
Right. Is it?
And when we're trying to decide whether there was probable cause, we have to look from the officer's perspective at whether a reasonable officer would have believed a person was committing a crime. You agree with that fundamental principle?
To an extent, the first statement that he was wearing a identification, I don't agree with.
He was wearing a red hat. It had the Kenosha logo on it. Are you disputing that?
The facts, I believe, are all in dispute.
So you're disputing that he had on the red hat with the logo? I'm not asking you whether your client saw he had the red hat with the logo. He's testified that he had the red hat with the logo on it.
My recollection fails me. I can't.
Okay, well, take my word.
That's
what Vina had on the logo, and it said Kenosha. And you agree that the standard we have to apply on probable cause is from the officer's perspective, whether there were a reasonable officer would have believed the person committed a crime, right?
On the assault and battery, doesn't make any difference what hat he was wearing.
Well,
that doesn't allow him to get to
my question, whether it's reasonable for an officer, knowing he's wearing a cap with the sheriff's logo on it, to believe that Lawrence was knowingly resisting his request.
I suppose that would be reasonable.
All right. Go ahead.
But the trial court, in granting the summary judgment, essentially based its decision on two decisions, one from this court and one from the United States Supreme Court. The first one is Bell versus Irwin, which was decided by the Seventh Circuit, and the second one is Saucier versus Katz, decided a decision by Justice Kennedy. Reading of both of those decisions, I respectfully suggest, cannot conclude that Mr. Vina had qualified or any kind of immunity to tear the rotator cuff of my client. Bell versus Irwin hardly compares to the facts in the case at bar. Bell admitted, quote, that he was armed with knives, drove his wife out of their home, refused to emerge or admit the police for discussion, held a knife to his throat while threatening suicide, and made a move toward the propane tank. Like the district judge, we think that Douglas should have thanked rather than sued the officers, is what this court rightfully said. There's nothing in Bell versus Irwin that remotely suggests that what my client suffered is not actionable. All we're asking for is a trial. In Saucier versus Katz, that's a very unusual case. Justice Kennedy, that's the general tumult, protesters in San Francisco at the speech of Vice President Gore, and I call it the push and shove case. They just took these protesters away and took them to a paddy wagon and pushed them into the paddy wagon. And what Justice Kennedy said was, not every push and shove, even if it may later seem unnecessary in the peace of a judge's chambers, violates the Fourth Amendment. In the circumstances presented to the policeman, which included the duty to protect the vice president's safety and security from persons unknown in number, there was no clearly established rule prohibiting him from acting as he did. This conclusion is confirmed by the uncontroverted fact that the force used, dragging Katz from the area and shoving him place him in the van was not so excessive that Kat suffered hurt or injury. That's exactly what happened to my client. He did suffer injury. They tore the defendant tore his rotator cuff. I respectfully submit that the basis for the district court's ruling was erroneous, and it should be overturned, and we're entitled to a trial. And that's why I ask.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sutton. Mr. Pollan.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Raymond Pollan, and I represent the defendant respondents in this action, Louis Vina and Kenosha County. There's no real dispute about the claims that have been brought under Wisconsin state law. The plaintiff never filed a response on our summary judgment on that, and those issues are decided or at least waived at this point. There's also no dispute regarding the claims against the county. There have been no actions pled of a policymaker. There have been no policy, practice, or custom that's been alleged. What we have is the defendants moved for summary judgment after having completed the depositions of the plaintiff and the plaintiff's girlfriend. Since looking at the amended complaint, there were no genuine issues of material fact. This is a classic case that should come to the court on summary judgment because there are no genuine issues of material fact that are outcome determinative one way or the other. I don't think I've ever done this before in a brief, but we attached in our brief copies of the full text of the depositions of both Mr. Lawrence and his girlfriend, the two witnesses in the case, because when you read those and you compare them to the amended complaint, you look at this case, and we looked at this case and came to the conclusion summary judgment was appropriate. Mr. Sutton said something, and he repeated it a couple of times, and he said that Mr. Lawrence's rotator cuff was torn. There is no objective findings in the record to prove that. And in fact, just the opposite. There were two motions pending before Judge Randa at the time he granted the motion for summary judgment. After having taken the deposition of the plaintiff's doctor said he could come to no conclusion that the plaintiff suffered or received any injuries as a result of that event. In fact, he said to suggest that there was an injury would be speculative on his part, and he wasn't prepared to say that there were any injuries. So when he says that there was a torn rotator cuff, that's not only not true, but it's specifically contrary to the record. Captain Vina had a reasonable suspicion that there was the possible use of intoxication. The law allows for a temporary detention to allow for some questioning. The plaintiff's bizarre reaction when Captain Vina knocked on the hood of his car, called him an ass, led him to question. Maybe this man has been drinking. He walked over to the car. The car had an open window, and he asked for his driver's license to begin a dialogue to see if he had been using intoxicants. That was a reasonable, articulatable suspicion that something might be going on. That's a question of law for the court to decide.
Of course, he didn't identify himself to him, did he?
He had on a red cap with the shield on. He had on a gold belt. He had on a belt. With a gold badge on, he had.
Right, did he show? I mean, was that visible? The gold badge and the belt.
Remember,
because it was dark outside.
Yeah, well, but remember when this started, Captain Vina was standing in front of the car, and the headlights were shining on him. He was directing traffic. This wasn't a situation where Vina came up to the car in the dark. Vina was standing there directing traffic. He was standing exactly in front of Mr. Lawrence's car, such that Captain Vina could knock on the hood of the car. So he had a badge on his belt. He had the emblem on his cap. He had handcuffs on his belt. He had his service revolver to his side, and he had a special magazine to carry additional ammunition.
And that could be seen under his sweatshirt. Didn't he have on a sweatshirt?
He was wearing a shirt.
He was wearing a shirt.
And
that was all visible, his gun.
Absolutely. The only thing that was in dispute was there was an additional lanyard around his neck with an ID badge on it. Mr. Lawrence insists that he wasn't wearing the lanyard. Captain Vina said that he was wearing the lanyard. But with regard to all of those other things, those indicia of his authority as a police officer, he was wearing them, and there's no dispute about it. Vina went over to the open window and said,
Now, at this concert or whatever it was, liquor had been served, hadn't it? Or
yes,
sold?
Sir.
Yeah, killer, the bar or something.
A concert in Wisconsin? Yes, sir. You bet. It wasn't a Packer game, but it was a concert where, yes, there were people, but were using alcohol.
And cheese, no doubt.
No doubt. You need something to offset the beer sometimes. Lawrence, when he asked him for his driver's license, not only physically refused, he verbally refused and moved his car forward. And if there's one thing I want to point out, I'm not as proud about the brief in a section as I could be. The brief is an excellent setting forth of the law, but there is one particular part of the brief that we did argue before Judge Randa that isn't in our appellate brief. After summary judgment was filed, and in response, the plaintiff provided an affidavit saying the car wasn't moving at this time. Well, we provided affidavits, and it's right in the brief that at the time Captain Vina came forward and said, I want your license, that Mr. Lawrence moved his car forward. Captain Vina said so in his affidavit. Deputy Peck said so in his affidavit. Lawrence said so in his deposition. His girlfriend, Ms. Accardi, said so in her deposition. I'd refer the court to pages 37 and 38 of Mr. Lawrence's deposition. I refer the court to page 26 of Ms. Accardi's deposition, where they said the car was moving forward when he was trying to do this temporary stop. Now, after the summary judgment was filed, they came forward with an affidavit saying the car wasn't moving. That is contrary to what they said in their sworn affidavits, and Judge Randa specifically pointed that out. I'm sorry I didn't point out that specific example in the brief, but it is in the record, and the depositions are also in the record. To the extent that force was used, it was not unconstitutional. Plaintiff provided their original complaint in their appendix to their brief, but they didn't provide the amended complaint. And in paragraph 8 of their amended complaint, the plaintiff refers to the event as a negligent jerking of the plaintiff's arm. Judge Randa relied upon that in addition to the testimony in coming to the conclusion that this was not an unconstitutional use of force. There was no basis to claim Captain Vina acted in a plainly excessive manner. There was no grounds to say, except in hindsight, that maybe he may have been mistaken. In considering the reasonableness of the officer's conduct, I'd ask you also to consider that Lawrence was evading and specifically acting contrary to Vina's instructions to him at that time. Once Lawrence stopped his car, the record is clear, no force was used, and that there's no claim of excessive force being made from that point on. That issue about whether force was used, and the force was used during this struggle where Lawrence was driving forward and Vina was just trying to stop the car to complete the temporary detention, is a question of law. The Bell case says so. The Bell case says, after the U.S. Supreme Court case in Graham, that these are issues that don't go to the jury, but they are questions of law for the judge to decide.
To reach into a moving car and grab someone's arm, right? I doubt that's recommended police behavior.
I would say on the other side, it's pretty dangerous after a police officer comes to your window and says, I want to see your driver's license, to continue to drive forward. Officer Vina didn't know what was going
on. Sure, but you know, you call another officer and have the car stopped. And
in fact, Your Honor, that's just what did happen.
Right.
Officer Vina
reaching in to grab a person's arm while he's in a moving car is dangerous.
Officer Vina reached
dangerous
in
to the officer. Yeah, he just dragged by the car.
No doubt about it. Officer Vina reached in to grab the gear shift, and he intended to put the car in park. Mr. Lawrence resisted that effort, and so he grabbed his arm instead of being able to grab the gear shift. At that moment, that's when Deputy Peck did come over to assist, and at that point, the car was stopped, and Mr. Lawrence was escorted out of the car. Officer Vina wasn't grabbing Mr. Lawrence for the purpose of arresting him. He was trying to grab the gear shift and attempt to stop the car to complete the temporary detention that he had begun. As the court pointed out, this review of his conduct is taken from the view of a reasonable officer at the time, and again, that's an objective test. That objective test this court can look at as a question of law. For those reasons noted, I'd ask the court to consider that there are no material facts that that preclude you from affirming the district court's dismissal of the case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Powell.
Thank you.
Mr. Sutton, how much time does he have? 5 minutes?
The only thing I would like to point out is that the facts that have been relayed here, if you read the affidavits of all the people, that's not what happened. Mr. Vena not only pulled his arm, he ultimately pulled him out of the car, pulled his arm all the way back to the top of his neck, and tore his rotator cuff. Now, that'll be a disputed fact at trial, but we have our medical testimony, they moved to suppress it and all that kind of thing. But that's what our evidence is. And what happened there is not as benign as the defendants would have you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next.